Welcome to the BFM Historical Society. This week, we talk to Stinky Jim, one of BFM's longest-serving hosts. He tells us what keeps him passionate about being on the radio every week, talks about his band, Unitone Hi-Fi, and a little about his independent record company, Round Trip Mars. Welcome to the BFM Historical Society. Stinky Jim, a long time Stinky Grooves has been running. Can you recall what year it was you first started up here?
From memory, and it is pretty shaky, I did my first shows when I came over here in 88, 89 with Mark Grimward, who later on went on to be our record label boss in Germany. BFM was obviously a happening place and was a huge fan of Duncan's reggae show and the old Sunday afternoon country business. You know, I mean, that was at a primo time then. So it's just one of those things I slipped into and never quite managed to slip out of, which is great. And then when I came back in 1990, it's either 90 or 91 that I started doing shows, but Stinky Grooves wasn't Stinky Grooves. It was a nameless, shapeless gym type show. And then it became Stinky Grooves in 90 or 91.
As a result, you became Stinky Jim as well.
Well, that's right, yeah. I think that first appeared on, what was the old nightclub in Fort Street? Poster for that Grant Fell used to run. Surge. I think it was Stinky Grooves Jim on a poster that Grant did, and it was like, now that's too clunky. We can't have that. So it's like, if you're going to do that, put Stinky Jim. And of course, you know, famous last words. It's stuck ever since.
How do you sort of best describe the style that you play? Not necessarily genres, but what makes a track so that you want to play it on Stinky Grooves?
Well, that is the X factor, really, because I mean, obviously best known for reggae and whatnot, and Jamaican-based or derived music, but at the same time, Stinky Grooves covers a wide amount of other stuff, and it's always been going through the same gap that everyone else is going through, trying to find another one. So back in the early days, for example, when there was not so much hip-hop on BFM, you'd hear it on your show and on Beats Per Minute, but you'd hear a lot of Def Jam and things like that, and I wanted to play the Ghetto Boys, mainly because no one else was playing the Ghetto Boys, and it was quite, you know, confrontational and full on, and it's like, this should be heard by people. So that's always been a sort of, if there's any one kind of premise that's gone throughout the 18 odd years of Stinky Grooves, it has been to sort of try and find new gaps and sneak some music out rather than just playing the same thing as everyone else. Though at the same time, of course, if a tune's killer and we're all playing it, well, that's because it's killer. Well, I think it's a really exciting time in music when it's really fresh, when these, you know, and something like reggaeton, I mean, I picked up on it way late compared to stuff had been going on for years and years in South America, but it hit this sort of little zeitgeist moment where it was suddenly sort of blown up in different places, and it had this real freshness. And I think that is, you know, at the moment there's a lot of the cumbia stuff that's coming out of Buenos Aires is similarly right there in the pocket at the minute, and I can just see some of it sort of starting to veer off and fit into other bags, and that's where it starts to get less interesting. It becomes formalized. I personally always love that period of music where it's fresh and there's loads of new ideas. There's no real rules. People are doing things, trying to do something and doing it wrong, and it comes out brilliant. And so I guess that's something I'm always looking for. And, you know, say drum and bass, for me, there was two or three years there, you know, jungle before and then drum and bass, where it was just crazy. Every month people were doing mad new records that no one had done something like that before. And that period of time, that's what I love. So I guess there's always a natural turnover with those kind of things, you know. Musical styles, they reach a point and then, you know, lots of people get into it, which is great because it doesn't really need an idiot like me pushing it. And there's probably some interesting little thing that some bloke's doing in some little laboratory somewhere around the world. And let's go and find his gig and his mates, and then it grows out. So ever replenishing. I used to come up here, you know, from working in Real Groovy, and I'd have a bag of records. Some of them just come in, some things I'd found in the bin, some things that I maybe bought over when I moved over from England and whatnot. And I'd come up with a bag and I could carry it up from Real Groovy to up here, no problem. Now, you know, my Tuesdays are spent going through 200-300 MP3s of stuff that's been sent to me, stuff that I've downloaded, going through those, trying to pick out those winners. And sometimes it might only be out of those, you know, 200-300 tunes, three or four that actually make it onto the show. But you've got to go through and listen to all of them. So if anything, you know, it's more accessibility to music, whether that's a good thing overall, I don't know, but I don't see it drying up. On the other hand, there is a phenomenal amount of crap, you know, just an insane tsunami of utterly rubbish, directionless, inspirationless, dull, vapid genre-based music. There's just screeds and screeds of it. So, you know, you've got the good and the bad, and the gig is always being, you know, trying to be a good filter, I guess. You know, I mean, I do, if I put my record label hat on, my Round Trip Mars hat on, what worries me is that there's diminishing returns for musicians. And I think that is the one thing that could lead to, not music drying up, but some really interesting little avenues and what have you not being there anymore, which is a, you know, major concern. You know, I am fanatical about radio, I think, and, you know, BFM obviously in particular, but just that radio above everything, to me, it is a little bit like going to church. If I was more of a churchy kind of person, that 3 hours I spend up here, you know, with the music going and putting it together, and the privilege of being able to do that and being invited into people's homes or cars or whatever, that humbles me and stuns me on a weekly basis. And you know, I think it is the ultimate privilege. It's apart from everything else. All right, this first one, I think On You Sound has played such a pivotal, you know, role in BFM's development, such an amazing label, and BFM has always supported it so strongly that I couldn't resist putting a Dub Syndicate tune, and Ravi Shankar is a particularly choice one, and used to be used for Steve Barker's On The Wire radio show, which is a great inspiration to me. That was a theme tune for his radio show, and it's just a beautiful piece of music.
Now, Tranquility Base, that was a Thursday night?
Thursday nights, yeah. It was 11 to 1. The show started with Eddie Chambers and myself doing a what was then called the Thursday Night Special, which was 11 to 1, which would be people specialising on, you know, I'm a huge Morrissey fan, here's 2 hours of, you know, Morrissey or Smith's in those days, Smith's records or whatever. We wanted to do a special on bass. Just the bassiest records, the records with the most ridiculous bass. So we did that, and then the FM was a lot looser in those days. People would drop out of a show with an afternoon's notice, and we'd say, we'll do another one. And I think we did about 3 bass specials before we kind of hooked ourselves into that slot, and Tranquility Base was born out of that. I started doing the show with Eddie, and then I was doing it by myself, and then Kirk, who was working for BMG at the time, he was really keen to get involved. Very much was a show that was designed to be appropriate to that hour. And as Kirk always used to say, you know, one of the best compliments ever was people going, I like to sleep to that show. I start listening and then I drift off. And it was like, well, okay, we're doing our job then, you know. From time to time, you know, we'd go and play some old dubby stuff that might have just been reissued, or I dug up from somewhere or something, or Kirk had found somewhere. And so there would be a little bit of crossover, but not the majority of the stuff. And Tranquility Base was like a real chance to play those tunes that were a lot longer, that were, you know, with electronic music, a lot of people doing 10, 12-minute long tracks. They might have, you know, a 2-minute intro with no beats and a 3-minute outro with no beats. And so we took a real opportunity to cover that space with space samples and nonsense that we'd dredge up from all over the place. And so those songs really did, you know, it was very clear that that's a Tranquility Base tune. Even though there was a little bit of crossover, there was a real distinctive kind of tune that went on Tranquility Base, you know. All right, next up, Meat Beat Manifesto, Radio Babylon. I put this tune on, or selected this, mainly thinking of Tranquility Base and the music that came out of Tranquility Base. And this was a track that was sort of seminal, actually a little bit before we started Tranquility Base, but it's one that kept on getting remixed and we kept on playing it because it's just got one of the most incredible bass lines ever.
Babylon.
I love that aspect of radio, which is different. You can't, you know, Stinky Grooves is such a, there's so much music that I try to cram into 3 hours. I really like the fact that Tranquility Base is a little bit more focused and based on things like, you know, having lots of dialogue and sound effect and sort of creating a different audio atmosphere. But I think the music that, if I was doing that, would be very different today. Though, you know, I still look at like people we were playing then, like Global Communications or Moody Boys stuff and things like that. I'm still playing their records today, so, you know.
Jim, I'd like to talk now about Unitone Hi-Fi, which is your musical project and has been for some time. Can you tell us the genesis of that, if you like, how that all started off?
Well, it kicked off just next door in what was formerly the BFM studio, not the on-air studio, but the recording studio. I'd met Joost Langveld and Eddie Chambers, and they were making good music, Joost and Eddie together, and, you know, we were all in a similar headspace, and they sort of invited me up to sort of guest on a couple of their tunes, just bring up some records and some samples and bits and pieces, and, you know, sort of get involved. Fantastic. And we had a few sweaty old sessions next door. So I guested on a couple of their tunes, and it's just sort of suggested a bit of a direction, which Joost and myself mainly kind of followed. You know, we started working together, and that was the first Unitone Hi-Fi tracks. Then, you know, Joost and Eddie both moved over to New York at a pretty similar time, and I would go over to New York and record mainly with Joost, and Eddie was involved in some of the stuff, but he was working a lot. So Joost and myself would be, you know, heads down at 4 o'clock in the morning in, you know, literally sometimes a hallway in the Lower East Side in the middle of August, when all the sensible people leave New York, you know, busting out these tunes for what became Wickedness Increased, the first album, in which I think came out in 1995. And that came out through Mark Grimward, who was ex-BFM and had moved to Germany and set up a record label there.
From 95, how much stuff did you release? Just take us through a quick discography of Unitone.
Well, we did Wickedness Increased in 95, and then I guess would have been the following year, 96, would have been Rewound and Rerubbed, which was the remix album, which was a bit of a new concept at the time. There weren't a lot of people doing them, and there certainly was the first one released in New Zealand, and it befuddled a number of retailers and people here. What's a remix album? I mean, we had, you know, ex-members of Wire doing drum and bass mixes, which really, you know, satisfied the old punk in me, and sort of compadres like the Rockers Hi-Fi or Manasseh, like people whose music looked up to or had links with, and the Funky Porcini mix, which, you know, sort of went off and had a life of its own. He actually didn't want to give that to us. He got the parts for the tune and made his remix, which was, you know, I think it's fair to say it's more than a remix. It's very much his own tune, but there's a lot of our stuff in there, and he didn't want to give it to us. And the deal we had to cut with him to get the tune was to say, okay, you can put it on your album. You can even put it under another name, but you've got to credit us. We need it for our remix album. And if you don't do that,
we're not letting you.
Yeah, you can't, you know, because he had all these different elements of our song in there. Yeah, I mean, we had some amazing people. Muslim Gauze did the first ever remix he ever did for anyone, and remixed the entire album basically, and just chopped parts of one song up with another song and fed them through some bizarre thing that was doing very speed stuff. And I mean, some of it's absolutely unlistenable, some of it's genius. There's a French geezer or a label that's wanting to put that out now, so we've just passed over the masters of, or what we have left of the masters of that, because Bryn Jones, who's Muslim Gauze, is dead now, and people collect his music really seriously, and we've got all these unreleased mixes that he did. So, wow. And then we did an EP called the Foxy Frotter EP, which was around the time we did a tour around Europe and France and Germany and England and whatnot. And then we made Boomshot, the last album, which was made sort of, some of the tracks were done in New York, some of the tracks were done here at Incubator with Angus McNaughton, who was also part of Unitone Hi-Fi in his floating, nebulous, spectrish, wonderful Angus way, right from the get-go. There's tracks on Wickedness Increased that he was heavily involved with. So yeah, it's sort of after the Unitone Hi-Fi sort of dissolved a little bit for a while, Angus and myself were keen to continue making music together. We're both, you know, in the throes of deep op shop record buying, phenomenal amounts of sort of bossa nova beats that we could pinch and all sorts of. So we started out being called Soundproof, which was a good name. We did a remix for HDU under that name. We did a remix for Digidub over in London under that name. And then found out there's some English group called Soundproof, and they were on a major label, and you know, you just didn't need to have it read out to you that you were going to lose that battle. So we changed the name to Phase 5. many years before New Zealand On Air started calling one of their projects the Phase 5 project. It released an album which started off the whole sort of round trip Mars kerfuffle. And, you know, suddenly I was looking at SJD's album, and Angus was living, went and lived down in Dunedin for a while. We've started doing, working together again on a very casual basis, which is really nice, very different to those sort of really quite frantic sessions where I go over to New York for 2 weeks, be doing interviews, be playing gigs, and be recording with Yoast. And we got asked to remix a track from the Takutafe remix album of Hieronym Elbum and Richard Nunn's, which we'd actually pinched a noise from on one of the Unitone Hi-Fi records back in the day. So we felt really that that was something we should do. And on we trundle. It's interesting because when we were doing that stuff, there weren't many people making instrumental reggae music. I always hesitated at the dub word because to me, a dub is a certain thing. It's a deconstruction. Well, some of our tunes were where we'd have a full vocal from Asterix and we'd deconstruct it to maybe one or two lines. But some of a lot of our tunes were written specifically to be deconstructed, and I think that's a different thing. Well, yeah. Of course, now everything's called dub. Anything that's vaguely reggae is called dub. It doesn't mean anything, but it's nice to think that we were doing that stuff all those years ago. Now everyone does it. Next up, a tune that I really believe BFM owned and made for this country from Dawn Penn. No, no, no. A friend of mine picked this up for me from the dub vendor in London, sent it over on 7-inch. Graham Hill, who was program director at the time, heard it, absolutely fell in love. I think he was doing the breakfast show too, and just played it daily. And it became a massive BFM hit. And it was one of our tunes. No one else in this country, or certainly in this town, would have played it. And it just became a BFM tune. And it's still just righteous today.
running a record label. Tell us about how that came about.
Well, you know, another one of those, you know, sort of things like ending up being called Stinky Jim, where you think, I'm going to do this and it will do this, but it doesn't do that, it does something else. The intention of Roundtrip Mars was for it to be an outlet for Angus and myself and our Phase 5 and Soundproof, whatever. Of course, the reality was that as soon as we put out a 12-inch in 99, suddenly all these people started popping up, all these great people like SJD and Double Entendre and just these amazing artists, Phelps and Munro. It felt like there was this great, interesting wave of rule-breaking artists that didn't fit into the established paths. At the time, Cog were doing most of the electronic music, but these are guys that kind of stepped outside of those more established camps. So as we're putting the Phase 5 album together, started dreaming up this idea of a compilation, which was Sideways, and we'll put that out. You know, can't do any harm, put out a compilation. Of course, you know, 10 years later, here I am still running a record label. In the interim, I've put out very little of my own music because I've mainly been running a record label. SJD said, you know, I'm going to make another album and I'd quite like you to put it out if you'd be into it. And I was right up for it. I just wanted to hear what he was going to do next. And that, I mean, that basically is my premise with everyone on the label. I just want to know what they're going to do next. If I'm going to be fortunate enough to be the first person to hear that and maybe to be able to offer a bit of help, that's not a job. That's a privilege. Phelps and Munro came to me through Adrian Dentice, who was involved with Double Entendre, who sort of said, there's this guy who's doing these tunes. They're crazy. You might like it. And I was delivered a CD with 30 sort of between 30 seconds and 1.5 minute long slices of music that were just from the manic, spazziest stuff to the most beautiful post-rocky, tortoisey, all this amazing, really wild stuff. And it was like, I want that one, which was Horse Winning Without Rider. But also, you know, when you're getting stuff like that, you just think, you know, I want to hear how some of these tunes could end up happening if they were taken outside of this, you know, what then became the Phelps Munro album. And I feel we should probably play Phelps Munro, Horse Winning Without Rider, because it is, you know, it was a huge BFM favourite and deservedly so. And it's a tune that just every time I listen to it, it absolutely floors me. There's nothing else quite like it. The version we're going to play on, which is the album version, not the version on Sideways, actually features, what's his name, Monkey Boy, who was doing, here we are in New Zealand Music Month. It was a New Zealand Music Month live to air. Mr. Phelps and Munro, being the chap that he is, that, you know, creates huge, you know, dramatic pauses in his music. And bless him, old Monkey Boy sort of stepped in there to say it was all over when it wasn't all over. And we liked it so much that we transferred that from the tape and added it to the version that we put on the album. And it's the only vocals on the entire album.
Genuine BFM radio blooper moment. live to air. And it made it into the song. It's fantastic.
Okay, I can only guess that that's it.